both of these, both my experience of both of these things was coming to me, being high in the sky in an airplane and then imagining being pulled down by a great weight. It must be very fearful, high up in the air. I guess I was identifying with Trinavarta. Then the words came very heavy. Well, he didn't read them heavy, but it really struck me that he hit the stone ground with it. He smashed on the ground. It just sounds so real. Then while I was kind of making my way through these feelings, it occurred to me that the real thing is to relish the rasa of Krishna. And otherwise, what's the sense of wandering from one sensation to another? It has a worth if we can connect it all to Krishna. So there on the ground, then, maybe I didn't do that so well in my sensations up in the air. But when I got on the ground, then my devotional brain was working better, and I realized the rasa. The ladies all get running to the beloved Krishna, and I was thinking, yes, this is good. I'm hearing about the rasa. Just let it work on me. Let it purify me. I don't have to figure it out. Just listen to how they love Krishna, and now that he's back to life, they're so happy. And then I thought something that if at the time of death, if you can remember a pastime like this or any pastime, that will be perfection. All right, I'll call on you by hands, but I may pick some of you, and if you don't want to speak, just say no thanks or something like that. So okay, I'll start that. If I don't know your name, if I can't remember, I'll just point and ask you to speak. Prabhu, would you like to speak?
Well, when I was speaking for the past time, I was picturing in my mind also the picture of the book. And since my eyes were closed, I don't see anything. As was described before, they can see the inhabitants of the town, they can see Sarah. But at the same time, I was seeing Trinavarta holding Krishna on his shoulder. And then suddenly, some thought came into my mind about what's going to happen next before he was going to appear.
What's going to happen next? Guru Prasad?
Having a child of myself.
Speak a little louder.
Having a child of myself and being there without it.
Hmm. Agubir?
I was... One thing that struck me was some impression of the intensity of emotion that Mother Yasoda must have been feeling. Because she felt that she lost her child. She felt she lost Krishna, that he was gone, dead, or something. And I remember in one of our temples one time, a mother and child were there, and the child died in the temple. The experience of having the mother there and her emotions is quite intense. Then when I think that, like it says, that the bliss of Krishna consciousness, or an atom of the bliss of Krishna consciousness, is a trillion times greater than all the bliss of Brahman realization. So what I was trying to think, or what's inconceivable, what was the emotion of Mother Yasoda? If having some experience of mother's emotion or losing the child here, what is that emotion? And it actually struck me that Srila Prabhupada, he doesn't overstate, or it's quite a restrained, he uses quite restrained language, not very sort of emotional or emotive so much. Anyway, that struck me, that what an amazing thing it must have been for Yasoda to undergo.
Yeah, you're making that same point that I was thinking about, which is the other side of loving Krishna as a child. All the rasas have a lot of transcendental pain in them, but it's never to be seen as they all experience, for example, the pain of separation, which is the most intense. So ordinary people, they don't want to get so involved with Krishna. But they experience these pains in the material world when their baby dies. But if you experience the pain of thinking that Krishna is your baby and you think he's going to die, as Raghubir said, the pain of it, or the sorrow, would be greater than the mother's sorrow. Because as she thinks, well, I don't know, even an ordinary mother's grief is a very tremendous thing. But still, people go on living. But Mother Yasoda's grief was greater also. And Prabhupada writes that she was never in a calm state of mind, always anxious that he may touch some sharp thing on the ground, or the monkeys, or the water, or something or other. So, but we should never think that this is actually a material lamentation. So the Trinavarta, although it's brief, we really get that sense again. And why? Because then, when it comes back, then the bliss and the relief is so great that we can't imagine her ecstasy and bliss. Because Krishna never does drown, he doesn't die. He just does something and then he appears again on the breast of the witch, or in this case, playing on the big chest of the destroyed demon. But that swinging from the anxiety and grief to the bliss is what goes on with all the parents. Not just one parent. There's one Yasoda. Nobody can be Yasoda. But there's many, many parents. And here we see them all rushing to the child when he comes back. Yes?
Yasoda is prepared, so anxious about Krishna, she's prepared to die a million times for any speck of dust that may just land on his body.
And there's a statement by almost the same about Nanda Maharaj. He says, I'm prepared to die thousands of times for a drop of sweat, a particle of sweat on Krishna's body. That Krishna not be bothered by any unnecessary perspiration, I'll die a million times. All that matters in the world is Krishna. Nothing else about myself, how I feel, and But just, is Krishna all right? If Krishna's all right, then I'm all right. And if Krishna's in danger, then I'm in anxiety. Someone else? Kunti, would you like to speak? You have to speak louder.
I was particularly struck by the point at the end, their acceptance based on their cultural development and the culture that they had. They were able to very simply accept how Krishna came to be alive and how the deity was dead, because of piety. Krishna was still alive. And then the simplicity of their just accepting that is very amazing.
Yeah. We get so many glimpses into Vedic culture. Like that one. Yeah.
I was just imagining this, I was thinking of, I was remembering my friend of mine was saying that Krishna is God and he could have easily made his parents' life very nice and peaceful, but instead he's putting them into so much anxiety, worries, worries, and anxiety. I learned this particular very easily hellish life itself. She's telling me, well, look at Krishna, you know, Krishna, he could have given his mother a yacht and a nice house, and praise God, he could have given anything, but here he's giving us much anxiety, always, he's a plan.
And one answer as to why he's doing it, he just wants to make them so mad that they can't think of anything but him. In Prabhupada's last pastimes, he was causing the devotees so much anxiety, he was going to pass away, and then he said he wanted to go on a bullock ride, and the two camps of devotees started arguing that he should go because he wants to go, no, he shouldn't go because he'll die on the way. And Krishna said, Prabhupada, our anxiety over you is driving us mad with our love for you. You're making us crazy out of a love for you. And Prabhupada said, that is my duty. So the duty to bring out the love for the disciples, so that he's just, he can't think of anything else. He's just trying in every way to serve and to think, and getting more and more anxiety over that. Getting more and more detached from the body, from the mind, from the family, from everything, even from peace. That was an example. Yeah, so it's like what you were saying too. There's just like nothing left in life except trying to take care of Krishna and saving him from the next, not saving him, but trying to protect him from the next calamity. So he's doing it to make them more and more mad after him. Whether you do it as the lover of Krishna or the parent of Krishna, the object is to become mad after Krishna. Prabhupada used that phrase once. The GBC had an unauthorized meeting in 1972 or 71. Prabhupada sent a telegram. It was a very bureaucratic meeting. We passed a lot of unauthorized legislation. He said, he sent a telegram, stop these things. He said something to the effect that your legal formulas will not help us. We have to become mad after Krishna. So that's what Mother Yasoda is. All right, we want to have one more of these sessions with Prabhupada doing the reading, and I still intend to try this method of breaking into smaller groups. I'm not quite ready to do it, but when we do it, I can tell you the mechanics of it. We'll make up the groups without consulting, like that you go with your friends. I'll just pick them out and tell you what group you're in, and the ladies will be in groups by themselves. And then what I hope we'll be able to do, modeled after what Burijan is doing and Jagadish Maharaj is, we need to do it all in this room, because the way our groups, they have to immediately start responding after the hearing. So I would like to just give one reading, like myself read, and you would already be situated in different parts of the room. It's maybe going to take seven groups to divide this up. And then you can sit in little groups, and then I'll read. And then you start discussing, just like we're doing. See, one thing is, it's hard to hear ladies when they talk, but you'll be all right next to each other, you'll be able to hear each other. And more people will participate. And I'll just kind of go from one group to another and try to just hear what you're doing and drop a suggestion, but not try to take it over. And then after maybe 20 minutes, we'll come back to this setting again. But I'm not sure whether, I think maybe we'll do one more class like this, and then we'll do that. But we'll do that soon. Okay. Now a little discussion before we go to the next reading. That ends that chapter, more or less. And then the next chapter is called The Vision of the Universal Form. There are some other pastimes in that chapter, but I'm not going to cover them all. And the vision of the universal form doesn't start right off with that. But rather, there are quite a few things that happen first. And one is the name-giving ceremony. This is very important in the understanding the identity of Krishna. When Garga Muni comes, and you see the relationships among the devotees too, how Nanda Maharaj receives him with great honor and says, I'm just a householder and you're the great Brahmin. Why have you come to my home? Are you blessing my home? And Nanda seems to be like a simple, naive person, and the other person is a great educated transcendentalist. But actually Nanda is more advanced devotee. There's a nice prayer one devotee makes, that let others study the Vedas or the Upanishads in order to understand the absolute truth. I will do my service just by worshipping Nanda Maharaj, who has captured the absolute truth in his hand, and he's walking him in the backyard. I think I can finish all my spiritual work just by worshipping Nanda. Why study these Upanishads? So, but Nanda appears like a simple man, and he's so honored by the Brahmin from the Yadu dynasty. And he asks him, so please, again, Vedic culture, shown here, please give my son's names and bless them. So Garga Muni says, oh, I'm afraid to do that because if I do this, everybody knows I'm the priest of Vasudev, and they'll make some conclusions that Krishna may be Vasudev's son, and if Kamsa hears this, he wants to kill these children coming from Vasudev and Devaki. So he hints that Krishna is the actual son of Vasudev, and Balaram was already known to be the son of Vasudev. So Nanda agrees that maybe they shouldn't, for Krishna's protection, have a ceremony that will be known. Therefore, they have it privately in the cowshed. And the names are given to Balaram, names are given Rama, Sankarshan, and Baba? Baladeva. And then he explains what becomes important in later, the colors of Krishna in the different yugas. Reading the horoscope, this child before, he was this color, he was that color. And one of these statements is that one of the important proofs of Lord Chaitanya's being Krishna, that one time he appeared as gold. And then in fact this whole scene and what he says is brought up later by Nanda. After so many wonderful things happen, then the cowherd men, they all come to Nanda and say, what is this Krishna? Is he God or is he a child? And Nanda then he reviews what Garga Muni said, which is that he is Narayana Sama. He's on the same level of Narayan. So this is revealed in this name-giving ceremony. Then after that, there's one of these, what I call general descriptions, meaning that sometimes we get a dramatic scene takes place in the same right before our eyes, like the Trinavarta. But sometimes activities are described over a period of time. There's some really nice ones about the boys. It's that, you know, sometimes the boys did this when they went into the forest, and sometimes they did that, and sometimes they did this. All these typical activities are described. So now there's a really wonderful section in here, typical activities of Krishna at this age. So they include crawling on the ground, and they were so friendly babies that sometimes they would crawl up to somebody that wasn't their parents, you know, just by hearing their ankle bracelets. And then they would get there and see, oh, it's not my parents, and they would become afraid. And then the wonderful activities in the Goshala, where they would grab onto the tail of the calves and be dragged through the mud. And everyone would come and laugh and enjoy their playing. So we can see them growing up. He's not just a little infant, almost like a doll or a deity being bathed at the Abhishek. Now he can move, he can kick a cart and knock it over, that he did earlier. And he can fly in the sky, he can kill the Putana. And even when they're not doing, that's when he does something extraordinary. But even in his apparently human feature, they're old enough to do different things, and they're starting to get into mischief, just like a human baby. And the mothers can attest to this, how when the babies start moving around, they have to follow the baby at every moment. It says here, they were so restless, their mothers would try to protect them. And always anxious to protect their children, they were not very tranquil. And then they began to stand. So now we get introduced to the fact that Krishna is naughty. Not only, as you pointed out, he gets into difficulties that cause anxiety about his life, but he's naughty and causes a lot of trouble. So when he did so many naughty activities, then there's the scene where the gopis lodge complaints. Now we're going to play that on the tape very Prabhupada. And this expression is one, a nice Prabhupada expression, lodge complaints. It sounds like it comes from the British Civil Service or something. you go to the complaint department. So they didn't exactly have a complaint department, but in that spirit they marched over to Mother Yasoda's house to have some fun, actually. But their apparent critical purpose was to lodge complaints against the restless boys. So we're running out of time. At least we can hear it, because I promised. But We won't have much time for reviewing it. Give you two homework questions. As usual, just two or three sentences. Here's a doubt. You can just imagine someone is confronting you with it. I'll state the doubt and then you answer the doubt. These stories in Krishna books sound like mythology. Explain to me how you accept them as literally true. Explain how is it that you can accept them as literally true? Okay, number two, I'll say it and then I'll explain a little bit. Give your own allegorical explanation of the Trinavarta Leela. This requires an explanation. First, write it down. Now, we say that the Krishna book is not allegory. First, what is an allegory? An allegory is when you tell a story, and the purpose of the story is to reveal some higher truth, like the Paranjana allegory. So we take the Krishna books as literally true, but they're allegorical meanings. Like, and so I'm asking you to give a personal one. One devotee, he said that when he read the Puttana story, it showed to him that people, even devotees, said sometimes they appear to be very nice and beautiful, but they have some sinister motive. So he's taking the Puttana story, and he said this story is an allegory to this principle. So he doesn't mean, that doesn't mean he doesn't believe the Puttana story as true, but he has given a personal allegorical meaning. So when you think of the Trinavarta story, think of some, call it a lesson, if that word allegory is